Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to a special edition of Boston Bastard Brigade's One-on-One, recorded live at the Radisson Hotel in Manchester, New Hampshire, during this past weekend's Another Anime Convention. Now, before we get to the interviews, I wanted to take some time to talk about AAC and what my experience was like. First of all, the whole setup at AAC was stupendous. It's not as big of a con as, say, Anime Boston, but the way everything gelled from the panels and cosplay to the contests being held, it was a nice convention where you can be just a little bit more loosey-goosey than at a bigger expo. And what makes AAC so good is that because it's smaller, there's more of a direct connection between the congoers, the guests, and even the staff members. I mean, sure, it got a little crowded here and there, but it wasn't at the levels that I felt from Boston Comic Con. I dove into a few panels this past weekend, especially ones with the guests, just about all who you'll be hearing from in just a brief moment. Movie Buff was a great one, where Lauren Landa and Chris Kaysen just shot the shit about movies, but in a way that intertwined with their own personal experience when watching these films and revisiting some of the places where the movies were being made. The chemistry between the two of them were so good that I told them that they should do a weekly podcast show version of it. Then there was J. Michael Tatum's WTF event, where we heard some really funny but incredibly raunchy stories from the man who voiced some of our favorite characters. And the way he tells these tales, I think if he ever decided to give stand-up a shot, he would have enough great material for, seriously, like a Comedy Central special. Jay, if you're hearing this, when you are back in Texas, or if you go to an event that's in New York City, and if you come across an open mic stand-up event at one of the bars, bring some of those tales of love and wonderment to the mic, and I can almost guarantee that you'll leave audience members hurting from laughing so hard. Or horrified. Either way, it's a win-win situation. On Saturday, I checked out David Vincent's voice acting tryouts as I watched congoers try their hand at the art of voice acting. It was a very educational experience where we learned the basics of voicing characters, a couple exercise techniques, and a certain vocal cue that I think was referred to as number 102. That sounds easy when you hear it being explained, but performing it, it's a whole new can of worms. Following that one was Titan Talk with Landa, Tatum, and Christopher Smith, taking some audience questions and sharing their thoughts on the show in the process of working on a popular series such as this. It was a real eye-opener to see what challenges come about adapting one of the biggest shows in Japan for an English-speaking audience. As for the masquerade, a lot of my friends and I agreed that it went a little bit too long. The references were about 5 to 10 years too late, some of the singers that performed were a bit too off-key, and the dancing they could have done less with. I liked the Devil May Cry skit, I liked the one with the Arakawa Under the Bridge character, and a couple other ones that I can't think of off the top of my head, but for the most part, it wasn't that great. I think this may be the only negative thing I can say about Another Anime Convention. They made up with it with a party afterwards, with Rabbit Revolution behind the turntables. Great dance party, but I had to call early because I had to still use my legs the next day. I've had really bad experiences at like E3 and PAX East where I would dance a whole night and then the next day I'd be like, oh god, I can't move. So for this time around, I was like, I need to learn from my past experience. Go to bed early. And I did. And I felt so much better the next day. Now, Sunday, the main panel I checked out featured all the voice actors taking random questions from the audience, but before it began, I had a chance to talk to Patrick Sykes quickly and asked him about JoJo's Bizarre Adventures, where he dubbed the first three episodes of Stardust Crusaders as Dio, and apparently, these are the only three that are currently dubbed, so if you want more to be seen, well, fill up Viz Media's inbox to make it happen. But the panel was a lot of fun, and it was funny hearing some of the behind-the-mic stories involving, like, growling stomachs, snuggies, and farts. So, all in all, another anime convention is a fun little weekend event that any anime fan in New England should check out. I had fun with my friends from Anime Jam Session and Scarlet Pepsi, and I managed to finally find a figure from my favorite anime series, Hayate the Combat Butler. For years I've been searching, and I discovered it in the last con I'd expect. It's kind of like how I found that Suzu figure from Nagasubete Airato at Boston Comic Con. And now, we've come to the moment you've all been waiting for, the interviews. First off, you'll be hearing from Chris Kasson and Christopher Smith as we chat about their respective roles in Fullmetal Alchemist, Honey and Clover, Lego Batman, and Hetalia. It's a very loose interview. We go into some tangents, but I think everything tied up very nicely. Then, you are going to hear from Lauren Landa and J. Michael Tatum. Now, I had a lot of things planned with these two voice actors specifically, but around, say, the 10-minute mark of this piece, this interview transformed itself into what I always wanted one-on-one to be. A sort of barroom mentality where people are basically talking like old friends, sharing a couple drinks, and reminiscing. Mind you, we do talk quite a bit about Attack on Titan, but as a whole, the interview will give off a more homely, more laid-back style of chatting. It helped, too, that we were doing the interviews in, like, the nicest hotel room I have ever seen. It had a kitchen, a couch, and two comfy chairs, an office setup. It had everything that the most fanciest hotel room you can imagine could have. It looked, as I told Chris Kasson before our interview, it looked like the place you'd see at the end of a mafia movie where the Don gets killed by a close confidant. Now, one last thing before we begin, I want to give a huge shout out to the staff at AAC for putting everything together, despite the fact that they had a delayed start of setting up due to a certain Bill Clinton coming in the night before for a Democratic convention. At least that's the rumor I heard. I don't know if that's true or not. If it isn't true, let us know at thebastard@bossandbashmate.com and share with us what the reason was behind a bit of the late start with the setting up. So, for them to get just about everything ready in a time, though, that's still solid teamwork. Also, a very special thank you to Vice Chairman Jessica Gabrielle for helping out with everything before, during, and after the interviews. And, sorry for talking your ear off about everything beforehand. I tend to get a little nervous before an interview, and it sometimes helps to ease the nerves a bit. Okay, without further delay, let's get to what you've tuned in for. It's time for another Anime Convention 2014, a one-on-one special featuring Chris Kasson, Christopher Smith, Lauren Landa, and J. Michael Tatum. Right now, I am joined by not one, but two incredibly talented voice actors in the industry. First off, he can be heard acting in a gluttonous manner on Fullmetal Alchemist, the complete and holy Roman Empire in Italia, and paying homage to that weird Mega Man box art and Street Fighter X Tekken. Welcome to Boston Bastard Gate, first off, Mr. Chris Kasson.
Oh, please! Thank you!
Yeah,
well, I was clapping for you.
Thanks.
How about you? I wasn't clapping for you.
Well, whatever you want to do.
I almost did, but I didn't.
That was close.
But then I did.
A little bit.
So I really, yeah.
Okay, I smell something.
Throw that in.
Yeah. And second,
He is the king of Midland in the new Berserk films. The heartfelt Professor Shuji in Honey and Clover. And the voice of the Joker in the Lego Batman video games, including the upcoming Beyond Gotham video game. There are other roles, but he does so much shit that it fills up an entire phone book.
Back to crapping.
Please welcome to Boston Bash Brigade, Mr. Christopher Smith.
Hi, can I just say, hi, Jamie. Can I just say I love the way you do the physicality?
Thank you very much.
On the audio podcast?
Yeah, it's how you really try to bring out the personality.
It really
of
is. It's you're getting in touch with your inner Italian or something.
I'm more French Canadian with a little bit of German, but even so, the German still makes the French side surrender.
Whoa. I need a
minute. Too soon, dude. Too soon.
Oh, man.
What, 70 years is too soon?
Well, for the French.
The French have long forgotten about it. Because they've got the things to worry about.
Then what?
But, you know, it's day one right now, but how is New Hampshire treating you two so far?
How's it treating you?
I love it. This is my 7th year to be here, and I love coming here every year. And I love it. I love the people. I love the scenery. I love the whole thing. The food, obviously. I love it.
Same here. The New Hampshire food, especially. I love the New Hampshire Cajun food. It's really spectacular. Yeah, we just had, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. A little bit too spicy for
me.
Who knew?
Who knew that there was such a Cajun collective here in New Hampshire?
I think
we found them and we made them feed us.
Yeah, I think maybe after what happened in Louisiana, maybe they came up here and started to spread the Cajun culture up here.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Yeah. So, first of all, like, what got you two interested in voice acting? Was it like a show that really made you want to be behind the mic, or was it something that happened by accident?
Community service, that kind of thing.
I lost a bet.
Yeah. Lost a bet.
To Chris, actually.
There you go. What started our interest in voice acting?
Yes.
Ooh, let's see. I may remember back I started.
Get off my lawn!
We can stop this, right, and start over? Cool.
Yes.
It's not live radio.
I watched cartoons as a kid, and, you know, I sat on the floor with a bowl of cereal after school watching cartoons, but I didn't know. There were a few of them that were not animals hitting each other over the head with mallets. There were some that were very, like, wow, these are drawn in a different way, or these are, this is, there's emotional layers here as opposed to just me laughing, which I also did. I mean, I love Tom and Jerry and stuff like that, too. And, you know, I liked, someone had an idea. I like stuff like...
An angel got his way.
like Star Blazers, and I watched Voltron and Robotech and G-Force Battle Planets and stuff like that. So that's where I first encountered animation from other lands. And that's where it began.
Japanimation.
I almost did, because it was all
that. That's what we called it back then.
Yeah. Yes.
When we were insensitive.
I wouldn't say it's insensitive. It's more of the long version of anime. Japanimation. There's too many syllables. Let's just do this part right here.
Sure.
The Earth was cooling. And I was a big fan of the reruns of Speed Racer and Astro Boy and Kimba the White Lion. So the, you know, old school anime. And I wanted to be Kimba the White Lion. I didn't want to just be the voice of Kimba the White Lion, and some of you have heard this story before, so don't groan, you know.
No.
Yet.
My dad grew up watching Kimba the White Lion and Astro Boy and all that
stuff.
Oh!
Boy, my lumbago!
We're going to need a few minutes.
Have I set my lawn yet?
I grew up with Astro Boy myself. I really related to him.
Well, living next door? He's like the weird neighbor. He flies!
Yeah.
Fire coming out of his feet. But he makes a good souffle.
Yeah.
I literally wanted to be, when I was six, I wanted to be Kimba the White Lion. I had no idea how animation worked. But I obviously had a full working knowledge of reincarnation, because I wanted to die and come back as Kimba. And I moved to Los Angeles right out of high school and started taking classes with people that I knew could give me a good education and help me out in the business. And it was all uphill from there.
Very cool, very cool. Do you remember the first auditions you guys had as voice actors? Do you remember it fondly of sorts?
I remember it, and I remember it fondly.
Nice.
Chris?
Oh, wow. Over to me in the studio.
Yeah. Back to you.
Yeah. No, because I know you have more.
I do.
You always have more.
Oh, you?
Yeah.
Turns out, I do have more. And that is that my first
wait,
audition...
Wait, there's more.
There's more.
Now how much would you pay?
It turns out that there was... I had a friend who was in a comedy troupe with me, although you wouldn't know now. And he said, hey, they're doing... He said, they're auditioning for cartoons in... I forgot where he said. He said, you should go do it. It's fine. I auditioned. So I said, sure. You know, you spend most of your time auditioning as opposed to acting. And an actor auditions all the time. So I drive into this terrible-looking bank building in the middle of nowhere, and a man with a beard hands me a notebook of funny-looking people, and I just try to come up with the voices for them, what they would sound like. And I auditioned for tons of characters, and then I drove home and thought, what a dump. This place, well, this will never work. And then I got a call a week later, and they said, hey, she was from the Chicago area, and she was the... she said...
Hi, this is Patty. This is Chris Case, and this is Patty. I just want you to know that you've got two characters in a show called Dragon Ball Z. It was Tien Shin Han and Mr. Popo. I said, gobbledygoo, lady, I don't know what you're saying, but I'll be there. And I showed up to record this thing, and so the first, I had no idea what it would turn into, but it was a lot of fun.
So my first professional voice acting gig was Dragon Ball Z, which is weird.
That's amazing.
In 1998.
Whew.
Back in the day.
I started out in radio production, and did that for a few years. And my first introduction to anime and to dubbing animation was on the original Captain Harlock and Robotech.
Wow.
Series. I know, right? I'm really well preserved. I loved it because it's like I'm working in cartoons. It was really wonderful, and I did that for a while. Just did whatever I could voiceover wise until about 2001, 2002, and that's when really the floodgates opened. And have had a steady diet of it since then, and haven't had to look back. So.
Very cool. So before going behind the mic, before doing anything like that, do you guys have any special routines that you like to do? Something to practice the voice, or like listening to an album or a band that gets you pumped up to be behind the mic to record a role?
I do squat thrusts because I like to keep my core strong, obviously. I like to do sit-ups and push-ups to keep myself physically fit. And then the vocal warm-ups, you know. Actually, a great thing you can do in the car is... You can sing along to your favorite song. It really, especially in the morning if you're recording, which is not a great idea, but it really opens up your voice if you just, just sing along as opposed to, if you don't have a lot of time, that's one way to do it. And so I do that sometimes, and it just depends on, like if it's the middle of the day and I've already been talking and I'm ready to go. But in the morning I need to do a little extra. So, and yes, I was kidding about the working out.
Well, we have video footage of it right here.
Oh, no! Oh, no, that's squat thrusts in the car. I've seen you.
Oh, yeah. Car thrusts, I call them. Yeah. Oh, man.
While driving.
Yeah. And drinking my coffee.
Road rage. Mm. Yeah. Let's see. Prep. I drive to Burbank. That's what I do. I drive to Burbank. It's a long drive. And if it's a morning gig, then I will like sing along with Guns N' Roses. Because
Appetite?
What's that?
Appetite. It's my favorite album of theirs. Appetite for Destruction.
Welcome to the jungle.
Yeah, exactly.
We got everything you want.
That just sort of clears all the morning muck out of my inner face.
Oh yeah, and, I can imagine that. Yeah. So let's go on to like specific roles that you two have done. So first,
welcome to the.
Oh, sorry.
So
I love your Axel.
So, Mr. Kaysen, I want to first talk about your role in Street Fighter X Tekken. A role that many people would love to play is the role of Mega Man, because he's such a legend.
Sure.
But...
Big butt, so yes. To speak. Yeah.
But the Mega Man that you got to play is the most infamous of all Mega Mans. The horrible box art from the North American release.
That's right.
So my question is, what sort of like mentality did you have to set yourself up into when it came to voicing such a character that, I don't want to say he was a hated interpretation of it, maybe a misunderstood interpretation of it.
thanks for your diplomacy. well, what's funny about that one is I just thought it was fun and funny, and I didn't think it was going to, quote-unquote, end the franchise, or I didn't have the doom and gloom approach that I think followed it, although I think it was proven to be maybe... You know, I think now people are able to look back and just have a laugh. I thought it was really funny. I just approached him as being this sort of blustery, almost like a Dudley Do-Right blustery, kind of past his prime guy who hits the buffet and, you know, doesn't really fight anymore. So I thought it was funny and a lot of fun, and I remember specifically... While recording that, there was a bottle with a spoon on top to the right, and I was recording, and they stopped recording and said, turn to your right and pour the contents of the bottle into the spoon and take it down. And I just did it. It could have been poison. I just did whatever I was told. I said, sure, blah, blah, blah. Am I going to die? No. And it was cough syrup. And I said, why am I taking this? He said, because you're about to yell for 30 minutes straight. And I'd never had preemptive strike cough syrup for a session. And as a director, too, I thought, ooh, that's a good trick. I like that. So I remember that specifically from those sessions. So, you know, prior to yelling, cough syrup. Not bad.
Oh, I think it's a good tip for our listeners who are either voice actors, who want to be voice actors, and people like me who do podcast shows, because let's face it, after a show, like, my voice gets a little bit like this.
People who just like to yell.
Sure. People who road rage, etc. Yeah, mm-hmm. Why not?
Horrible marriages. Drink some down before you drive.
There's a message.
Exactly.
A spoonful of medicine helps the driving go down in a very, very bad route.
A Poppins fan. Yeah, I hear this.
So, Mr. Smith, Berserk one of those movies or one of those series that is as famous as it is infamous. Bloody, gory, and everything. So, as the character of the King of Midland in the recent Golden Age arc films, how do you go about capturing the weariness of a ruler who has seen so much blood, so much war, so much betrayal, and is filled up with so much guilt by everything that he's done?
I'd drive to Burbank. Yeah. It's pretty much the catch-all for everything. You just get yourself into a space where, you know, flogging this guy for the 419th time just is not enough. You've got to go for 420. And
you sure do.
Yeah, because you do. Because I believe in even numbers. And
on propaganda number 9.
You just tap into any piece of frustration and rage that you've ever had, and you put that into your performance. It was actually very taxing to do that, because family friendly, warm and fuzzy, you know, these shows ain't, and just. There's just so much ultra-violence.
I don't know if you noticed or not, but over in Japan, it got the equivalent of a XXX rating over there.
I did not know that, but I'm not surprised. Because over here, it's like, ooh, ooh, wow, ooh, jeez, wow, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, it was an interesting property to be a part of, just because of that. Because they pulled no punches when it came to the violences.
And fans like me and fans from one of my fellow podcast shows, Wicked Anime, are grateful for a show like Berserk that can push the limits like it can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's part of what... It made it very edgy, and people responded to it, I think. I don't want to say because it made people uncomfortable, but maybe because it made people uncomfortable.
So long as the seats are still sitting, whether they're squirming, doesn't matter.
Exactly. There wasn't a dry seat in the house.
Wow. Now, going...
I just want that to sit there for a while. Sounds great. Appreciate that.
Those are great shoes. Thank you. I love those shoes.
Thank you so much.
You podcasters on the other end of this, you can't see his shoes, man. These are awesome shoes.
They're pure skateboard shoes.
Oh, they're
I used
like
to ollie down the sidewalk. No, just kidding.
They look like they've got that classic Adidas look.
Yeah, with the benefit of being total knockoffs. So it's a win-win. Yeah.
Are they Vans?
No, they're total knockoffs. They're Zans.
Well, let's
go further down the alphabet.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the royal route.
Oh, right.
Oh,
yes.
Right.
Going back to royalty, more lighthearted, the Holy Roman Empire. In Italia, Did you ever imagine how big the fan base was going to be with Hetalia? Because I've been to so many conventions, and it's brutal insanity what a lot of these fans are doing with the Hetalia characters.
I agree with what you're saying. And then could you extrapolate on brutal insanity and what your definition is?
Okay, so when I Boston this past year, there was a conga line of Hetalia characters not going through the conventions, but through all the stores that were in the mall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't... Okay, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
And we blame you.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah. I put them there. What do I think of... Well, I think it's great that there's a large fandom for... You know, for the show, and I have to admit that recording anything, I never assume it's going to be like, this is going to blow up and be amazing. I just go in and try to do a good job, and I leave, and I don't really, because you never know. Like, that's the weird thing. I know, maybe from a directing standpoint, that you know, you work as hard as you can, and you try to do the best every time, and then you send it off into the world. I can only imagine it would be sort of like sending off your child to kindergarten, or like first grade during lunch, and they have the tray, and you hope someone sits next to them at lunch, because you think it's so great, but maybe the audience doesn't like it.
Or the other way around, where they're going to be able to sit with the cool kids, or just some random kids.
Exactly, like who's going to sit with them at lunch, so, and you never know, and there's also a gap of, there's a lot of time in between, like 6 months or even longer, so between the time that you complete it and it's done, you just don't know if it's going to be awesome or... People are not going to like it, and so I just always hope for the best.
So, Who did Hetalia wind up sitting with at lunch?
The screaming girls, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, right. The screaming girls.
I would say the screaming girls.
They're screaming right now, but it's so high pitched that only dogs can hear it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Dogs hate Hetalia. It's true.
Well, working on something like Hetalia, dealing with a lot of world history, was there anything about Hetalia that was educational to you? Like, did you learn something from Hetalia?
Absolutely not. I learned nothing from Hetalia. In fact, what's really funny is I heard...
That's not true. You learned stereotypes.
Exactly. I did, although I learned that from a crazy uncle of mine. Okay, but right. What's weird about it is some of the negative stuff I read about, you know, people who didn't like Hetalia, they said, we didn't like it because we felt the accents weren't authentic. And I thought, you are missing the point. I'm trying to do the worst version of the accents. You know, we were all doing that.
Yeah.
To really underscore the comedy. So, yeah, we're trying to be really, really broad versions of those characters.
Right. I believe in the concept of if it's offensive to everyone, then it's really offensive to no one.
Yeah, I guess what's well, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess what's worse is total apathy. If no one cares, that's probably the worst thing that could happen. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So, continuing on with little history and education, Mr. Smith... Honey and Clover is one of my absolute favorite anime series, and it's a show that I recommend to anyone who's either just about to start college or even just about to get out of college. As the voice of Shuji, I'm wondering if, when you were playing this character, if you were thinking back to like how you were in college and how you would have told these kids, how you would have educated these other people, these other students that were your character was chatting with throughout the show.
First of all, I want to thank you for being one of the six people who watched the show.
It's one of my absolute favorites.
It had I loved doing it. It was a great experience, and we recorded it for a long, long time. So we really got into the storyline. College was such a drunken blur. Wow. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, it was more about when you were recording the role of Shuji, if you thought about your own experiences on campus and used that to blend into your interpretation of the character.
A little bit. I mean, did I fall in love with my underage cousin? No. So I just want to throw that out there.
Right, right.
So, spoilers!
Do you have no idea how many like threads and editorial pieces there are specifically about that online?
Maybe. I probably wouldn't be surprised. No, I mean, it wasn't just the college experience, but it's just about young life experience, what it's like to be sort of like a mentor to all of these kids who are coming into their own and experiencing life for the first time, aspects of life for the first time, and really just finding themselves, because it's a show about finding yourself, and what is your, how do you define yourself, how do you define your personality, And I just think it was really something that everybody could relate to. There was no, you know, there was nothing supernatural about it. There were no giant robots or giant monsters or things like that. It was a really heartfelt, well-written drama without, you know, serial killers or anything like that.
Right. You know, and it's one of those shows where you can find just a little bit of yourself in each and every single person, and I think that was the idea.
That was the idea. And the people that the other five people that I've talked to who've seen the show, they felt pretty much the same way.
From our listeners out there, please check out Honey and Clover.
It's a really good show.
Yeah.
It is. It's one of those shows
where I say, like, I wish that there were shows on American TV that were as well written as Honey and Clover.
Right.
All right, Mr. Kaysen, let's go into probably my favorite role of yours. Let's talk about gluttony.
Okay.
Let's talk about...
Nobody rocks a black unitard like that guy. It's pretty strong.
Well, I have to ask, because how does one get into a mindset of a character that's not only cannibalistic, but also very simple-minded when it comes to his viewpoints of the world?
You say that like it's a negative thing.
Yeah, it helps me. How do I get into the... Okay, so the question is, how do I get into the mindset of a simple-minded person who likes to cannibal, who's a cannibal? I don't know. I may or may not have done the aforementioned squat thrust. I don't remember. But I will say that was a unique part because I did, you know, I worked on Full Metal Alchemist. Mm-hmm. There was probably a 5 or 6 year gap, give or take, I'm not sure. And then we essentially did it again. And so the idea of working on a show and then coming back to do it again was kind of like going to school, summer break, and going back to school, but a school you like going to.
Yeah.
And that was a very unique experience, particularly on that level. But it's happened to me twice, really, with Full Metal Alchemist and DBZ, the DBZ franchise. So Gluttony was unique in that way, certainly. And I had more fun, by the way, the second time, just because I felt more comfortable doing it. So.
And that was actually the answer to my second question. Which one did you prefer, the original or Brotherhood?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it more from an acting standpoint. I just felt more sure of myself, and I just enjoyed the process even more the second time. But also, actually, my favorite thing to do with the Full Metal franchise was, I believe it was in Japan, they had... I love dark rides. I like rides, like carnival-type rides and roller coasters and stuff, and they did a dark ride where you get a little buggy and you go through, and it was a Full Metal Alchemist dark ride.
Right, Universal Studios.
Yes, and I got to do the voice of Gluttony for the ride, and that to me was the coolest thing in the world.
Wow. Seriously? That is awesome.
That was so
That's
much
really awesome.
Wait,
really
so fun. The one in Japan that you did that for?
Yeah, they had both Japanese and English audio going in the ride, and I was the English audio.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
All right, so I got
that's cool. I did not know that. That's really bad.
That is really neat.
It was really fun. Yeah.
So, like, you get a new fan base from right across the ocean.
That would be awesome. And by the way, I would love to go to Japan and just check it out because, yeah.
It's great. It's a great place. I went back in 2007 just for a week, but just the memories I have of it is just... I want to get back there as soon as I can is basically what I want to say.
Cool.
All right, so, Mr. Smith.
Sir, yes, sir.
The Joker. The question shouldn't be about how you tried to capture it in the same way as others did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, the question should be, how did you take the Joker and mold it into your own vision of the Clown Prince of Crime?
Well, I did do a lot of research. I went in... I wasn't expecting to read for the Joker. I went in and I thought, let's see, I can do a pretty good Riddler, and I can do Superman, and I forget what the third one was that I was going to read for. And they were just like, no, we got Superman. Yeah, you can read for the Riddler if you want, but we've already got him. And so the director, Cam Clark, at the time, he handed me the script. He says, can you do the Joker? And I went, oh, yeah, sure I can, because the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
And I went out and I prepared, and... It came back in, and I did my best Joker, which was probably me as best I could trying to channel Mark Hamill. Which they liked, and then when I found out that I got cast, I went back and I watched a lot of the other Jokers. I watched a lot of Mark Hamill, and I watched a lot of Cesar Romero from the old Batman show from the 60s. And I spent some time watching Super Friends and the Larry Storch version of the Joker from that. Didn't really use it, but, you know, it was interesting research.
Right.
And just tried to combine that. And then when I got into the studio, we spent a little bit of time trying to find the character because it's the Lego franchise. They didn't want him to be dark and scary.
Yeah.
And they wanted him to be a lot sillier and a lot lighter.
So like the Cesar Romero version.
More like that, but they wanted elements of Mark Hamill, so we decided to give him a little bit more affectation. He even has a little bit of a speech impediment. And these were all things that we just developed pretty much on the spot for him, and again trying to keep him lighter. And listening back, I can hear where the various past elements have sort of influenced my performance. I can hear bits of Mark Hamill in there. I have much more of a Cesar Romero laugh,
yeah,
than a Mark Hamill Joker laugh.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of an amalgamation of these Jokers that have come before me.
And I believe that was the first Lego video game where people were talking.
It was indeed.
So you were paving the way for all the other ones.
Exactly. And it was just great fun. The cast was amazing, and they paired me up with Clancy Brown, who played Lex Luthor, who is just phenomenally talented and super gracious and fun to work with. And Joker and Lex Luthor bicker at each other like an old married couple, and it was just great. We did that for 3 days. So much fun.
Are you looking forward to how people are going to react to Beyond Gotham?
I'm really excited about that, actually. I love all the trailers that they're releasing. There are so many great people who are involved with this. I mean, they brought in Dee Bradley Baker to play Brainiac. And he's hilarious. He's absolutely hilarious. But they brought in some celebrities. But they're sort of like carefully selected celebrities. They brought in Adam West, who plays as, you know, TV's Batman from the 1960s. And they brought in Conan O'Brien to play Conan O'Brien and Kevin Smith to play Kevin Smith, who has his, like, monster megaphone, and that's how he defeats criminals.
Whoa, nice.
So it just, yeah, it looks great. And they brought in the guy who plays Green Arrow on Arrow to play Green Arrow.
Cool.
So, yeah, it looks really, really, really fun. I had a blast recording it. They brought us in for a group read the first two times and got to work with Troy Baker and Travis Willingham and Laura Bailey and Fred Tatasciore and Charlie Schlatter and all those guys. Great time. Really, really, really great time.
Cool. I hope all of our listeners are going to be able to check that game out. I believe it comes out in a couple weeks.
It does. It does. I think either end of October or beginning of November or something like that.
Yeah,
and there's a number of trailers online that show stuff, including a behind-the-scenes trailer. Interviews with Troy and Travis and Laura and myself. Pretty cool.
There we go. Very awesome. All right, so I got two more questions for you guys. So my first question is, out of all the characters you portrayed, who do you relate to the most and why?
What was the question? A hush fell over the room.
Yeah, they dimmed the lights, and I just started to fall asleep.
You thought the movie was starting.
Yeah, I was hoping. Let's see. Well, that's the loaded, as you know, that's a loaded question, because, I mean, the diplomatic answer is, they're all my children. They're all, I love them equally, and they're all different, and that's why, I mean, that's the actual, probably, that's the real answer, but I'm sure you want a, you know, specific character. Wow, okay. I don't, you know, an actor, I mean, not to be too actory, but you find that one thing, like City Slickers, you find the one thing that you identify with that connects you to the character, and that's what propels you forward and allows you to do a good job and really, you know, connect on multiple levels. So it's really hard to, there's a piece of you in everything. So that's really, that's a tough one. Maybe Hanai in School Rumble, because Hanai is a character that, you know, it's not a 30-foot monster with four heads. It's not a talking creature. I mean, it's a guy who... by the way, School Rumble, I thought was so... It's such a funny show, but he was very passionate, and he's after a girl, and, you know, it's sort of like the jilted... It doesn't quite work out, but he's so into it. You know, it's sort of a one-that-got-away story, really, for him.
Right.
So, you know, I think everyone can relate to that, including me. So I would say maybe that character. Although he yells a lot more than I do, which is to say I don't yell at all, so...
Unless it's behind a mic.
Right. I mean, that's scream therapy. But otherwise, he yelled every line. So that.
Cool. I don't know if I have characters that I really relate to. Because like you said, I mean, I relate to portions of all of the characters. I guess maybe especially the snarky douchebags. I play a lot of those.
You got a man.
I do. That's my niche. But there are characters that I've done that I definitely that are more my favorites than others. Luke Skywalker is sort of the pinnacle right now, having played Luke. Just got to play Batman this year. That was great, and I got to say I'm Batman. So you know that was I loved that. And Race Bannon, all these characters that I just grew up with idolizing. I mean, it took me 35 years to get to be Luke Skywalker, and I finally. Finally got to do it. So, what was the question?
Who do you relate to the most out of everyone that you portray?
Oh God, I don't know.
It's okay. It's all right. Maybe this will be an easier question. The final question I like to ask all the voice actors: if you guys were stuck on a deserted island,
oh no,
which three characters that you have portrayed in the past would you like to have around you to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Sane or safe?
Both. Sane and safe.
Okay.
If you play a lot of villains and creatures or whatever, you're not going to be... I mean, does it have to be good guys, first of all? Because they're going to keep you safe. Yeah. So right away, that takes a lot of them off the table. Okay. So good guys who will keep me safe on an island before I'm inevitably saved.
Any character or characters we played?
Characters you played.
Oh, jeez. Superman?
kind of go there. Yeah,
Superman. I get two more.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, Wonder Woman, because who wouldn't want to be stuck on a deserted island with Wonder Woman? But I haven't played her, so I guess that doesn't really count.
Right.
Over to you, Chris.
I would go with Babbitt from Kodosha. I really like the talking flying rabbit bat. I think that would entertain me until I was saved. And it wouldn't make me go crazy, although it might make some others go crazy. I would say Babbitt, I would say, Camo from Negima. A little 7-inch talking ermine that likes panties and smoking cigarettes. That's cool. I'm down with that. And then...
Better than smoking panties.
That's true.
Smoking
on a dry. Yeah. Probably those, and then also, I guess actually I would go to Hanai because Hanai is a character that I relate to, so I would like to relate to that guy until I'm saved and then not talk to him anymore.
Christopher Kaysen, Christopher Smith, thank you so much for joining us here on 101 here in Boston Bash Brigade, and please keep on kicking ass behind the microphone and have fun at the rest of another anime convention this weekend.
Thank you! Woo!
Once again, I am joined by two very talented voice actors in the anime industry. First off, she got her start in the theater realm before getting her foot in the voice acting realm in both anime and video games, from playing badass ninjas in our video games to ruling the magical realms amongst a sea of titans. She takes any role, big or small, and makes them ever so memorable. Please welcome, first off, to the Boston Bash Brigade, Miss Lauren Landa.
Hi. Me.
You're welcome.
Live studio audience.
Yeah. Audience of one. And second, 4 years ago, this man was the very first voice actor that we interviewed on the Boston Bachelor Brigade, from comedies like Oron High School Host Club, Sergeant Frog, and the recent Space Dandy, dramas like Space and Wolf and the action-packed Attack on Titan, and those series that are somewhere in between like Black Butler and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. This is a man who can take about any role and mold it into his own, which is pretty good for someone who was basically tricked into voice acting. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to 101 Mr. J. Michael Tatum.
Yeah!
Hey, I gave you a great intro too, Jason.
That was awesome. Thank you. It's good to be back. Wow, 4 years ago.
4 years.
The first person that you interviewed.
Yes, because seeing as you're from Texas and you get the best of both worlds, I've got to ask: do you prefer the city life of Boston or the more rules, relaxed countryside of New Hampshire?
Mm. Oh,
I'm curious about that too.
You know, I like the juxtaposition. Honestly, I grew up kind of in Texas, out in the suburbs, which is kind of like country suburbs. So it wasn't really metropolis, but it wasn't quite podunk either. So I kind of need a little bit of both. I'm a city boy and a country boy. I like being in a city that's within a few minutes drive of a nice scenic country area. So I like this whole area, actually. I don't know if I could put a dividing line.
Not too quiet, not too loud.
Not too quiet, not too loud. But yeah. if it ever becomes too isolated, I can go to the heart of a city. And if it ever becomes too loud, I can go out to the country and go leafing.
Oh, absolutely.
Leafing.
Get out of here. No, what is it? Oh, make like a tree and
Make like a tree and get out of here.
Thanks, Biff.
So, Lauren, you got your start in both stage and voice acting at a very young age. So was this career something that you really dreamed about doing as a kid, or was it something that happened accidentally?
The voiceover happened accidentally, actually, but I remember that Tatum...
This is why we can't have nice things.
Voiceover fell into my lap, actually. The stage productions theater... fell into my lap.
Sorry. We were all thinking it. You're a beautiful woman.
Yes.
I love you. theater, actually, I decided to get into at a very early age. Tatum, I'm so
sorry. We have a coffee maker open that's dying. It's like... I'm making
toast.
We're making breakfast. Don't go on about the show.
Well, you know what? The Boston Bash Brigade is the perfect place to do that.
There you go.
I love the way they say bastards up here. It's just so meaningful. Bastards. Wicked bastards.
Chowder.
Yes.
Chowder.
And what was the lobster?
Actually. Do you remember that? Everything you
actually.
Preface. Actually. You don't know what you're talking about. You preface everything actually.
We were at this restaurant last night. Going on a random tangent. We were at this restaurant last night and we started talking about the horrible Ebola outbreak that's going on in Dallas right now. And
now it's breaking out here in New England.
I guess so, but we...
Two people have it. It's not an outbreak.
Yes.
Outbreak.
It's still a dance.
We were talking about something. I don't remember what we were... Oh, we were talking about the nurse currently.
Yeah, the nurse.
That's being quarantined. And as we were talking about this, a waitress that wasn't even our waitress, she comes over, she says... Actually, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I'm just here to tell you,
your comments about the Ebola, and he is my thoughts, and just proceeded to school us all in her philosophy.
Yes.
My favorite thing was how she felt like, I've watched, the thing is, America just needs to wake up. All these movies have been made that
They're
have become a reality. Like, you know, The Day After Tomorrow. That's come true. We
and
have
now it's Outbreak
now.
With the Dustin Hoffman.
And now Outbreak, yeah. And then like an hour later, we were talking about Frozen, and she comes over,
actually.
And starts talking about why Frozen is the best movie. And we're like, what? Get out of here! No, I don't want to talk to you!
I think you even said, my, you're such an opinionated
lady. Yeah, it's like, what an opinionated lady.
If she had said, if she said Fellows is the best movie, I was like, it's no Wolf Children.
What? No, Wolf Children's great.
It should have won the Oscar.
It was so funny. It was so random because she just comes up to us after like almost two subjects that we were talking about and decides to fill us with knowledge. Oh,
these people are idiots. I need to like, disabuse them of their stupid ideas.
Apparently. Oh, it was so funny.
It was really
voiceover. Yeah,
that voiceover.
That's right.
What are we doing?
Theater I decided to do on my own. I had seen a few plays when I was younger. I remember distinctly seeing Oliver. Oliver's one of my favorite musicals.
Consider yourself at home.
Exactly. It's a very simple musical. It's not one of the many operas that Tatum knows about that are, I'm sure, beautiful but complicated at the same time, right?
Well, yeah, because they're hard.
Exactly.
Hard. Musical, you got like a few numbers, then you can like...
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's exactly what I mean by simple. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And I just remember falling in love with the story, and I remember, as depressing as it is, I really loved the character Nancy, and I thought, oh my gosh, she's such a great character. She is a great character, but just tragic at the same time. So I really wanted to get into acting that way, so I started with theater, and, you know, there were a bunch of little shows, but the first big show that I did was Annie. And then I got really sick of that show, and after a while, The Sun Doesn't Come Out. Comes out like a few months later.
Yeah. Tomorrow, just screw it. I'll exactly. come back next week.
Exactly.
It's a hard knock life for you.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, now the new Annie movie coming out with Jamie Foxx. Instead of, what is it? It's, I think the lyric is, life is tough when you are an orphan or something. I don't remember the exact lyric. It's been so long. But now they changed it to foster kid.
Oh, because orphan is so un-PC.
I think it is nowadays. I think it's, no one cares for you, a kid, when you live in an orphanage. That's what it is. And
it's
then
a soft
they
run.
Yes, and then they changed it to no one cares for you, a kid, when you are a foster kid or something like that.
Yeah.
So, either way.
A whole movie for me.
Yes. Oh, I'm not going to see the movie now because of that woman.
Very aware I'm watching a movie right
So now. I continued studying theater until I got to college. And when I got to college, I took a voice and diction class. The person that was teaching it is a very good friend of mine, Peggy O'Neill, who's a voice actress known from Wolf's Rain, Scrap Princess, Digimon...
Chris Kasem just tried to sneak out in the most Abbott and Costello way. You can hear the pizzicato strings go.
Guys, we got some bacon and
Actually,
it's 9:30 at night.
There's no breakfast here. And Digimon and Scrap Princess and Etika 7 and a lot of stuff. So I decided, hey, you know, I think I never thought of doing voiceover, but that sounds interesting. And I approached her about it, and she said, well, if you're interested in it, you should take some classes specifically for voiceover. And so she recommended a workshop, and that's how I met Tony Oliver, who's I think a dear friend to everybody in this industry.
He's like this industry's Merlin, in a way.
Pretty much. I call him the Papa Bear.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's kind of the creative compass for a lot of us in this industry.
Very
Would
much
you
so.
Like to go on an adventure of voice acting?
Yeah, pretty kind much.
Of,
if,
that's
if,
kind of the role he's played in a lot of our lives.
Oh, absolutely. Tony has played a big role in a lot of people's lives. And if he hasn't worked with somebody, they still know about him. They've met him some way. And Tony is, you know, known for being the voice of Rick Hunter from Robotech and everything else. Director, writer, producer, just all this stuff.
I consider him my Lupin.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. Whenever I talk about Tony, as soon as I mention Rick Hunter, the rest of the list goes blank. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many
there's just,
characters.
Yeah. he's been doing this for so long. He's really been at every stage of the anime popularity waves that come over, you know, like in the 80s and then again in the 90s and then again in the aughts, you know. Tony was an integral part of each
he was
each ripple
yes
you know? Yeah
so that's just and that's so he just kind of you know, he's been there for so long.
He has, and he's so supportive of everybody that I know. So I ended up taking a workshop with him, and he basically saw me, you know, kind of in the studio a bit, and he pulled me aside and said, yeah, you should do this. And I said, okay, and he put me on an auditioning list. And then a few months later, I was cast in Magical Girl Lyrical Nanoha, which was my first show, and that it really, literally fell into my lap.
Yeah.
Ow!
Very cool.
That's my brother from another mother. I love you.
Right. I love. She puts up with a lot of crap from me.
I do, but I love
a
it.
A lot of crap. That's why I love you.
All right. I love you. So, Mr. Tatum.
Mr. Tatum.
Mr. Tatum.
Mr. Tatum, where was this formality 30 minutes ago when you were calling Mike?
Mike.
Now it's Mr. Now Mr. The world's Tatum. Oh, no, really. I'm you know, I'm respectful. Bullshit.
I can never see you as a Mike. No, never.
I call him Jay sometimes.
He calls him Jay. He's
I can see Jay, but Jay. I can't see Mike.
Mike is weird. Yeah, Mike. That's what, I know so many Mikes.
Yeah.
And I associate with
him. There's even a song called So Many Mikes.
He's right, specifically right. A Michael. You are a Michael,
and
not
why
a
is
Mike.
That? I'm just curious. Because I feel that way, but I'm not, I couldn't identify
in my opinion, God. In my opinion, I think it's because you are such a distinguished person that I'm going to smack you in the chest.
The one who made the lap joke. It's the most distinguished person. Wow. We got nowhere to go but up now, kids.
No, you are just this incredibly distinguished, sophisticated person. The way you speak is absolutely gorgeous. And I think that Mike is an abbreviation for Michael, but it's very casual.
It's very casual. It's very mm-hmm. like... Yeah, every Mike I know like seems like a Mike. Like Mike McFarlane, one
exactly.
of my dearest friends. But Mike is such a Mike. You
exactly.
know, he's got that quality. He's
just
kind of like, you know, hey, yeah. Michael is, hearing you speak now about this, I feel like Michael is a name that belongs to someone who could host Masterpiece Theater if Masterpiece Theater was producing hentai. That's
well, PBS is
they
one state down.
To try to class that. Up things that really well, definitely you, need a makeover. That's what I do.
but you know what I'm saying is that while Mike is casual,
Mike is very casual and wry,
and you are a casual person. You're very chill, very you know, very easy to get along with. Yeah. But I don't know, just Michael seems to fit your personality.
And it's true because my first name is in fact John. That's what the J stands for. But my family's never called me John. So to them, I'm always Michael.
Right.
Which is weird because I think that you just look and act like a Michael. You don't seem like a John, and I don't know what a John would look or act like, even though I am technically one.
Right.
But I never go by that name, so it's really weird.
Yeah.
Sorry, I totally derailed
you. No, that's cool. It's cool. I never knew that.
I didn't even get past the name. Sorry.
Well, no, now our listeners know that the J stands for John.
Right, there you go. Yeah, the J stands for John. Or I'm going to start telling people it just stands for Just.
Yes.
What's your
just
name? Just Michael. Just Michael Tatum. I didn't know all these years ago when I used the J in front of my name that it would be the thing. I just thought I'd have one thing to my credit. And wouldn't it be nice to be like, look, that's me, J. Michael Tatum. I was on the show Samurai 7 with R. Bruce Elliott, who's a wonderful actor, and I came to see him as a great friend on the course of that show, and he always used the initial R before his name. And I just thought that was classy, and I thought, well, I'm going to go with J. Michael Tatum, but now I'm stuck.
It's totally an actor thing.
That's right.
Totally an actor thing.
It is an actor thing. You're just like, well, because Michael Tatum is a really common name.
Is it?
Yes. It's like, there's so many Michael Tatums. There's, in fact, several John Michael Tatums. When I got these glasses, not these, excuse me, the pair I had before, the day I got them, there was another gentleman in the same optometrist or the same, like, lens crafter store or wherever I was getting the same glasses whose name was John Michael Tatum, and we got each other's
no way.
And I was like, and we're like, what the? This is great. We didn't have the same prescription. I should have.
God forbid.
That just would have sent you over the edge.
Yeah, so I used the J to distinguish myself because I thought there's so many Michael Tatums. Anybody but J Michael Tatum. Like, only Michael would do
and
that.
Nobody, well, now they know, but before, nobody knows what the J stands for. So it's even more unique.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yes. So it's been 4 years since we've chatted, and four years ago, you were
I was nobody.
You were slowly starting to get the roles. You were getting Kyoka.
Life on the Streets.
Yeah, you were getting Lawrence from Spice and Wolf, and Scum from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. But now, you're now getting the big roles. Like, your name's now in the big headlights right now. Or
my name's in the head. Where? I don't see
it. Well, too many people. Like, as soon as people see that you are in a role, that you're a part of a show, people are like, I gotta watch it now because he's part of it.
Just listen for the girl screams. That's all you need. Listen for the girl screaming.
So it's a lot of fangirl favorites.
Yeah. So my question is, what would you tell yourself 4 years ago in order to prepare for what was about to happen?
I think I would tell myself there's nothing that can prepare you for this.
I imagine
myself now going to that four-year-old and being like, look, you fat bastard, start working out. Because there's going to be a lot of pictures of you on the internet soon. So, and for God's sakes, do something about that stupid hair. Like, I would have so many things like, what? Get a sense of fashion. Stop wearing those shoes. That, you know, whatever. It would mostly be as far as, like, fangirls. I think I would just tell them, I'm like, be ready for the criers. The criers. Like I was telling you, the criers. There's this phenomenon has happened over the past 4 years that never happened before. Things like Black Butler and Natalia came out. And of course, those are huge fangirl shows. And I'm not dissing fangirls at all. They're the lifeblood of my career, so I love them. But there's always a crier. One who is like, and I don't mean like just someone who's tearing up because they're so happy. I mean ugly cry. The ones that are like the kind of cry we have when we've just learned that, you know, our brand new Ferrari has just been, like, driven off a cliff.
Ferrari.
I mean, that's first world problems. Right. I know, right, guys? Yeah. But I mean, like, it's that kind of... And I had a girl one time come up to me, and this is such an example. She was so sweet, too, about it. But she was speechless, in tears. And she had a friend with her who was like, oh, talk to him. And I'm like, I don't know what to do when someone's crying in front of me like that. And so I'm like jingling keys and like making happy faces. I'm like, no crying.
Who's a good fan? You're a good fan.
And then she just, you know, she did the typical thing that Italian fans will do that I've started, which is they always want me to do the French lap, but I'll ask them to tell me a knock-knock joke. So it's kind of known if you want me to do the French lap, you know, just come up with some. Doesn't have to be good, it's just France.
Right.
So she came up and she's like, I have a joke for you. And this is after like 10 minutes of not being able to speak at all. And just, I mean, snot and tears just cascading down the fists she had
so
in front of her face. And,
sexy.
And I mean, really, really. And so she told me this knock-knock joke. And it was, knock-knock, who's there? Doctor who? And when I laughed, she just goes, and just walked away. And that was the whole exchange. I just never know what to do with that. I'm like, is she going to be okay? We need someone on her. Right. Because I feel concerned. But the criers. I would have warned myself about the criers. Be prepared for the crying.
I saw a crier today, actually.
Was there a crier today?
Yes, there was a crier today over Patrick.
Oh, well, that's understandable.
I know. It was very understandable. Yeah,
I cry. I'm not ashamed of it. Have you seen him yet?
Have you cried?
I cried when I saw him earlier this morning. Okay, first. I hadn't seen him in like a year.
I know.
Patrick, and I'm like... I couldn't even get that far. It's so hard to think back 4 years ago and distinguish it from now, because this all is kind of exists on a continuum for me that I don't really think much has changed for me personally. I mean, I still get up every morning and work on my scripts and turn them in on time and get some sessions and go into the studio, and I'll still do the concert. So the past 4 years have telescoped. I mean, I can't believe it's been 4 years. And when I stop and think about it, thanks for bringing it up, it kind of makes me pee myself a little bit, because I realize, oh my God, the past 4 years, it's been 4 years, Lauren. It's been four freaking years.
I know.
So it's weird. I think I'd be more interested to see what my 80-year-old self, God willing, I make it that far.
I'm sure he
comes back in time to be like, all right, so anime's going to turn. I don't know why I'm going to have an out. I'm going to move to Boston and take up the accent, so I'm going to be like 90, maybe we'll just say 80 years old. And I'll be
yeah.
So you're going to move to Boston, but you got to be ready.
Boston.
Actually.
Frozen was the number one film in the country. Because it teaches girls,
Frozen
teaches
has
girls
become,
that you know you don't fall in love at first sight all the time. That's why I made that.
That's
that was
why,
a reason.
And that's why mothers are taking their daughters to see it. I don't think that's why mothers are like, just shut up and go see Frozen. Get the hell out of my hair for 3 hours.
She's like, okay. They let us stay about an hour after they closed, which was nice, but we're just...
Maybe she was the closer. Maybe she was the one that's like, "They look, those people are not going to leave, but you go and just opine at them."
Maybe.
Like, maybe she actually believes none of that. Like, she, like we left, she's like, "Oh my God, I thought they'd never go."
Yeah. I imagined that, you know, I thought that when she came up to us, that, okay, yeah, that's legit. Like, that when she started to say, you know, all the movies
all
have told
movies.
Us that I'm like...
All these movies.
I started to get a little
Scrooged.
Concerned.
Yeah. Oh, man. All these movies, they've become facts now.
Well,
people don't watch the movies
anymore. I was concerned because when she said that, I said to myself, you know that these things happened... Before,
well, I want to be like, I'm like, well, in the case of Day After Tomorrow, global warming has been around for a while, and none of the
right.
events in the movie have actually come to pass yet,
right? Exactly.
You know, we haven't become a frozen tundra just yet.
Exactly.
It's just Roland Emmerich getting his jollies off at all of the things he has to do. Oh yeah, world destruction.
I mean, I think a lot of people just want the world to end because they're bored. Don't you?
Zombie
I mean,
apocalypse.
People, yeah. I'm like, oh.
They want to be like REM and feel fine afterwards.
in your comment, you know, you said that, you know, you said something that caught my interest. You said, oh my gosh, it's been 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much my view on a lot of things, especially in the last
right.
2 or 3 years.
Right.
That, oh
well,
my
me
God.
We have taken incredible personal journeys of our own.
Right.
Kind of that have touched upon each other.
Right,
the past
absolutely.
Couple of years.
So it's been very holy crap, you know, like it's been 2 or 3 years. So much has happened in the last 2 or 3 years. It's been, oh, you know, sometimes I wake up and I'll say, holy crap, you
yeah.
know, so it's bittersweet. It's definitely a bittersweet feeling.
It's weird to consider when I think about it because someone brought it up this morning to me today and I realized that the writing and the production on Titan coincided with a very difficult time in my life and in yours.
Yeah.
Well, I say difficult, certainly very turbulent.
Yes, yes.
In both our lives, which
yeah.
is a lot of changes, a lot of upheavals, a lot of sort of seismic shifts.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how I think a lot of that went into that particular show, which is really the first thing we've got to work on together. That we've
it is,
together
yes,
for years.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first thing we've gotten to work on together, which is, I just find that interesting, the way that life kind of...
It is, very much so.
It's like, guess what show you're going to be writing, so let's give you some experience.
Exactly, right? Or let's give you some crap to deal with in your
right,
life,
right,
you know?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Trust me, I read this Facebook, folks.
Yeah. Acting! So, yeah, that's fascinating. That's, we'll have to explore that a little bit on our Titan panel, which we're doing.
Yes,
Titan
panel, Titan which,
panel.
Let's see how many people ask us who we ship.
Oh,
I'm so gonna. I'm gonna put the kibosh on
please
that
do.
Within the first 5 minutes.
Please
I'm like,
do.
If you, of all you can think about in watching Titan, is who's stripping
then
who,
we haven't done
our
jobs.
We have failed as actors and writers and directors.
I agree with that though. Like to a certain extent, I do. I mean, I think the show, the dub sounds fantastic, mind you.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I think we've done our jobs, but.
But I think when you're a certain age, you just think about like there's
yeah.
nothing
yes.
that's gonna break
right.
through that.
Right.
Obsession.
Right, exactly.
You know?
But I do agree with you that
like,
that is
blood,
too
guts,
certain.
But they're hot.
But they're hot. Who would hook up? And I'm just, you know, every single time after the cast was announced, I started doing a panel called Titan Talk. And I unfortunately haven't been able to go to a lot of conventions with too many Titan cast members. But every single time I have done one, fans have said to me, who would you ship? And every single time, I feel so awkward answering that question because that's not what I think about when I see that show. And Tatum and I had that Titan Talk panel about 2 weeks ago
yeah,
at Anime USA,
mm-hmm.
and he brought up such a fantastic point of what is it that you say in the first episode?
It's like the first episode, the main character's mother watches his mother. The main character watches his mother brutally murdered
yeah.
by this awful, otherworldly-like creature. That
and all you can think about is...
And all you can think is, hey, he's hot. Who do you want to pair him with? I'm like, what is wrong with... Look at your life. Look at your choices. You know, if the Titans were ever a real thing, he would be the first to go.
Yeah.
Well, especially now, that whole thing with the creator of Attack on Titan when he was asked... Who's your favorite female character? He said Armin. Now look at what all the fanfic has been going on from that.
It's just so... I mean, I remember being young and kind of sex-obsessed. You know?
Yeah,
well,
we all do.
They're young people.
You know,
exploring their sexuality. It's kind of a taboo subject sometimes, so they want to explore it, and they want to bring us into that, which I understand. I do.
Well, it's just important. I mean, our job, I think, is to kind of help them kind of navigate that the inner geography of that obsession in some small way by being, oh, that's awesome.
But Sebastian maybe, and Ciel.
Yeah, no! God, no. But, I mean, it's interesting because you find yourself... at least I do in this position to try to be like, well, I don't want to be like, you're stupid for thinking that, because of course they're not.
Yeah.
No.
It's when you're that age, or well, and there are many people that still feel this way, well into their 40s and 50s, yes. You know, you become so fanatical about the taboo things, the forbidden things, that it's impossible. I guess the definition of a fanatic is someone who is just so overwhelmed by this new thing that they can't integrate it into their awareness of themselves, and so it just takes over.
It doesn't surprise me when fans ask me that.
No,
it's,
no,
but,
I'm never
but to
surprised,
me,
but at the same time, I'm like, but I always fear that they're missing
exactly
the heart of
yes,
the show
right.
by,
yeah.
by investing more meaning in these.
You're missing
things.
The character development.
You're missing
the
fact
action.
That the human race is trying to survive.
Yes.
What's more interesting to me in the case of Titan is that it's really about. You know, rather than being about, you know, who's pairing off with who, it's about who's incapable of pairing off with anybody because there's no time to sit and reflect
exactly.
and talk to each other.
Right.
You know, and so that to me is more what the show is about on several, I mean, the show is about many things on many levels, but on its deepest, it's ultimately about the way we have to kind of, as a, you know, when we're under that kind of pressure to survive, the tragic ways we have to kind of abbreviate ourselves
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
to get from day to day.
Which is exactly why... people have told me, if I'm going to watch Titan, I can't watch it while I'm stressed. That's exactly why.
No, you
cannot
watch.
You cannot watch that. When you are going through your own crap in life, and if you are incredibly stressed out, you can't watch Titan, because that's exactly what it's about. It's about all these characters being on all the time, you know, for different reasons. Obviously,
yes.
they're trying to survive.
Right.
But, no, I agree.
But they have their own coping mechanisms, and they all have to, you know, no one can say... anything, what they feel. And they can't even own their own feelings that are any deeper than, oh my God, just get me through this day or help
us
survive.
Yeah, they don't have that time.
They can't, they have no, there's no time to pause and reflect, and it just it wears them down.
It does.
Yeah.
It wears you down. I mean, I was going through some crap of my own when writing it, and so I just happened to make that connection, like, this is about people that are just unable to be who they really are.
That's
right.
Possibly why it hits you pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
no, I think so.
Had you not been through a difficult time, I don't... I mean, I'm sure you would have thought the same thing you do now, but it probably wouldn't have hit
wouldn't
you as
have
hard.
Hit me. And maybe the show really is about who's having sex with who, and I'm just a fanatic of the dark things, and so
absolutely.
I made the show about that. Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. I mean, maybe we're... maybe Titan is really all just about a big dating game.
You know... You know what kind of makes me think of is throughout the Harry Potter movie series, through 1 through 7, with all the characters going through just probably some of the worst moments of their lives.
Right.
And then there's this one moment in the first part of Deathly Hallows where Hermione and Harry Potter... What?
Where they're camping.
Yeah, they're camping.
Yeah.
And the two of them are dancing to the song Oh Children by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And they're finally having that moment of childhood that they never had because of all the bad shit that was happening to them at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a moment that is still... That still hasn't happened on Attack on Titan. I don't know if it will ever happen on Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
We still... But it's something that we still need to see. We want to see these people... be able to act the way that they want to act, not act in the way that they're being forced into because of the circumstances.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I've shown the first episode to quite a few people, the scene where, and it's one of your favorite scenes, it's where Armin is against going against the bullies. Mm-hmm. In that same scene, after, you know, when Aaron and Mikasa start running towards them, you know, there's that little funny part where Aaron's like, hey, back off! And then they see Mikasa running up behind him and they get freaked out. It's a little comedic moment, right?
Yes.
Well, I always turn to whomever I'm showing it to and say, appreciate that comedic moment because there's not a lot of them. That's it.
That's it. Close, you're going to get to a laugh track.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think I can sum up my impression of Titan in a word that C.K. Chesterton used once, the great critic and writer and poet C.K. Chesterton used to describe some of Shakespeare's greatest characters. And he described them as great souls enchained. And that was the source of their dramatic tension, was this constant, you know, their inability to rise above what the context had forced themselves to fold into. And that's what Titan is about, is all these characters. I mean, I think it's a testament to how, you know, compelling the characters are, even though we don't get to see them thrive, so to speak, as individuals, you know, living in a freer context. Because we do. We're like, God damn it, I just want to see them survive and be able to, yeah. You know, I want Mikasa to be able to say, Eren, I love you, and yeah. I want, you know, yes. And maybe Levi and Erwin to get it on, if that's the thing. I mean, I'm just saying.
That's what
you know,
I see.
But I mean, like, we want to see that happen, because even though we're seeing these characters under such a myopic, you know, tunnel vision view, because they're only, they have one note to play, and that is survival. Mm-hmm. You know, they're so compelling for their own individual reasons that we all really want to see them survive and get away, and it's so painful with the ones that don't make it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because there's such potential there. And
I'm very curious to know Erwin's background. I'm very curious to know about his background.
No, I'm kidding. He's a mystery to me. I don't know.
He must be. He is such an interesting character to me. And you, like I told you at Anime USA, you said something that is very much that really stuck with me, and that is, you know, I think after a certain scene, I think it was in the forest or something, when the female Titan comes and they trap
they
her.
Trap her.
And I think you said something like, oh, damn, well, that's why we follow his orders. That's why we listen to what he says.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. I think any character, it's a very strange comparison. It's going to be very strange. Well, I look at Erwin and I think of the great prince of the forest from Bambi.
Okay.
Because he...
I'm liking this. Because, I ship this.
Well... because... Well, as a kid...
Damn it! I went there. Jesus.
He's such a strong character. And I remember being a kid, and I remember being really scared throughout Bambi. Mm-hmm. You know, he loses his mother, the hunters come, the fire starts, but the great prince comes in, and, you know, pretty much pulls everybody to safety. He just takes control. He takes control, and you realize
that's why he is what he is.
Exactly. And I know it's a strange comparison, but you understand.
But I completely get understand, because that's Erwin. For me, at least, as playing him, was he's this character that's an utter mystery. You don't even know that you can safely trust him until you can.
Yes.
And then you realize that's why he is what he is. You know, mm-hmm. It's like he's one of those fascinating characters to watch and to play, certainly, and to write, mm-hmm. because, you know, you don't know what the hell he's about. He's terrifying because he could be anything.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's playing it so close to the best. But then in these, his character only comes out in these really intensely punctuated moments that just somehow just banishes for just a moment all the mystery.
Yeah.
You're like, that, okay, that's why we follow his orders, clearly, because the scene in the fourth. We are rambling, and I'm rambling on, and I'm sorry.
One more question I ask everybody. All my voice actor
guests.
All my voice actor guests I ask. Because as you, last time when we did the interview with you and I, my original last question was, where can we hear you next? And I know you don't like to talk about that. So I decided, what's something cool?
We don't like to talk about it. We can't.
We just can't.
Exactly.
Other people don't like us talking about it.
Exactly. So because of that, I came up with Three Character Island. And she heard a little bit about this from the Kaysen and Smith interview. All right, so if you guys...
Is this like 3 Mile Island? Is it the characters that ruined us?
No. Actually, the complete opposite. You guys were stuck on a deserted island. Which three characters that you have portrayed in the past would you like to have around you to keep you sane into your imminent risk, and why?
Oh, God, sane. Isaac
Dean from Bakano, because he could turn the most dire set of circumstances into a play. Erwin, because he's Erwin, and he will get us through those cold desert island nights and those hot desert island days. And
tough, right?
The third one is tough.
His pinky is bent.
My pinky is bent. Like I'm resisting extending it through
he's
the
thinking.
Third. What the hell's wrong with me? I've got pianist pinky. I can't push the octave anymore. I think my third. It could almost be arbitrary. I think I've played so many fascinating characters that I don't know that any of them would. Couldn't help but contribute to keeping me sane. But I think, I really, really think, just for the sheer fun of it, Sir Hammerlock from Borderlands 2.
Ooh, yeah!
That's awesome.
Island, because he strikes me as a really good storyteller, and I could listen to an old British fop talk forever. You know, even if it is my voice. I think I get sick of hearing my own voice after a while. Let me just say that.
Well, personally, one of my favorite characters that Tatum has played is Willie.
Oh, from
Romeo X.
Oh,
thank you. Which, I don't know if your viewers are familiar. I'm sure they are familiar with Romeo X. Juliet, but that's short for William Shakespeare.
Right. Yeah.
So, which I'm sure you loved playing.
I didn't actually. I loved it, but I was terrified. I didn't cast myself. That was the other director was like, you have to do this. And so I did. And it was great fun, but it's one of my favorite roles, actually, ever.
Yeah.
It's so hard to pick favorites. It really is. Even the Desert Island pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. If I ever do get stranded on a desert island, I'm so screwed. I don't know what the hell I'm going
to
do.
When it comes to keep me sane, that's a tough one, because a lot of my characters, I love them dearly, but a lot of my characters can be a little annoying. They're very enthusiastic, a lot of them, and a lot of them can be very like, let's stay positive, guys, let's just stay positive, and that's kind of the same way I am, which can sometimes be a little irritating, because in life, sometimes, to get on more of a deep level, but sometimes we have to feel negative emotions. It's human.
You gotta confront them.
Yes,
for what they
exactly.
Are.
So probably characters that probably Kasumi from Dead or Alive 5, because she's very strong. She definitely would be the backbone and somebody that I would rely on to definitely keep me sane. probably Leia from Tales of Exilia, because she's very. That's right. You were in Tales of Exilia.
Right.
That's right.
That's
another project we worked on.
Yeah. Kresnik is not one of my Desert Island guys.
No. He's cray.
He's a little. Yeah.
Trust him. Leia, because she is so incredibly positive, and I get a lot of young ladies that will come up to me and they'll be almost in tears. They'll say it to me, I love Leia because she starts off as a different character, but she becomes so strong near the end of it. And I'm very touched when women say that to me. So definitely Leia. And the third, I honestly would not. I don't know if I would choose Annie or not. I really don't know.
I'm just saying, if it's a desert island,
yeah,
and the only edible food is way up in the trees,
exactly,
Annie's going to be really handy.
Yeah, it should be really handy, but how do I know she's not going to kill me?
Oh, you know. She's going to kill you.
Exactly!
I mean, you're going to... better just be it over with quickly than starve to death on a desert island. That's going to suck, right?
Ever the optimist.
Sometimes you just have to confront those dark emotions. Like, we're gonna die.
No.
Tell me a story.
The third one, probably. I'm trying to think of the third one. The third one would probably be, probably Lychee Failing from Blaze Blue. She's very maternal. She's very motherly and very kind and warm. And when you're really stressed out, it's very nice to have that calming presence about you. So probably Lychee.
Excellent job, guys. Jay Michael Tatum, Lauren Landa, thank you again for joining us here on Boston Bash Brigade's One-on-One. And hope you have fun for the rest of another anime convention. And I really hope to see you guys again soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's not wait another 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
You never call me.
You never
call
what I do.
Anytime.